Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, this is Trevor from Halifax calling in to say that I support Creative Control on Patreon because I think long-form arts journalism is a crucial part of music culture and there's simply not enough of it out there today. Vish is a master interviewer, he lands great guests, and he has his finger on the pulse of the ever-changing music landscape both here in Canada and abroad. For all of these reasons and many more, I think you should support Creative Control on Patreon too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Visha's wife, and I will love him no matter what you do. And now he has me on the record saying that.
Christina Bellotti, Kathy Wilcox, and Steve Dorr are each musicians, songwriters, and artists who have all spent some time living in Washington, D.C. Known for their respective work in other bands like Slant Six, Bikini Kill, and Deep Lust, among others, the trio came together to form their own outfit some 20 years ago. The band is the Casual Dots, and they've released two stellar albums to date, a self-titled debut recorded in 2003, and 2022's Sanguine Truth, each of which were primarily captured by producer Guy Picciotto and engineer Don Ziantara and released on Bellotti's own label, Ixer Styx. The Casual Dots and I connected for a rare group conversation recently where we discussed living in places like Canada, Baltimore, Brooklyn, and London, among other places, how they each got into music as fans and players. The English rock group The Beatles how the Casual Dots first met and what prompted them to begin playing music together, the political and personal nature of their songs, how the narrative use of pronouns like I and you in song can be both specific to certain people or can be stand-ins for the behavior of larger groups or entities, which is what I was trying to convey in framing a convoluted question about such things. Spoiler alert, and sorry. Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet, James Brown and the Famous Flames, and Bobby Moore in the Foremost. Updates about some of the other bands they're each in, such as Wile, Bikini Kill, and Snoozers, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you, who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it, and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary source of revenue for all the work that goes into this show. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and very friendly staff who will happily help you place orders for things you want. Say you want the two Casual Dots records. It's easy. Just go to blackbird.ca, type in the Casual Dots, see what they got. If they don't got what you need, give them a call. I'm sure they'll order it in for you. Or you can fill in a form and order it right there. Blackbird.ca for all your hard-to-find music titles in Alberta and beyond. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 745 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and thoughtful Christina Bellotti, Kathy Wilcox, and Steve Dorr of the Casual Dots, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Christina. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Baltimore, Maryland right now.
Oh, nice. How you live in Baltimore, I gather.
Uh-huh.
How long have you been there?
I've been here about 10 years, I think.
Ah, and why Baltimore exactly? I know most of us know Baltimore, I would say, in the world, because A, the Orioles. And I guess you got a football team.
Yeah.
And then also the TV show The Wire. You ever seen that?
The Wire. I've seen parts of it. I haven't watched it yet.
From what you've seen, is Baltimore anything like what we hear about in The Wire?
There's parts yeah. of Baltimore. I mean, I don't know. I came here 10 years ago to go to grad school, and my daughter is getting a good education here. So she likes it.
Nice.
So.
And 10 years ago, where were you before that?
Los Angeles.
Oh, California. Wow. So you got that's a climate difference for sure, I'm gathering.
Yeah, but I'm from the East Coast, so I was kind of wanted to get back to some more serious weather.
some weather with some gravitas. They didn't fuck around the weather in Baltimore, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice. I heard tell recently that you actually spent some time in Canada. Speaking of weather, is that true?
Yes. I lived in Canada from 3 to 6.
This is parents doing some work or something?
No, just my parents doing some... my dad built a house. He built a dome house. Just my parents getting away from the U.S. for a while.
Ah, okay. Do you ever feel like doing that these days?
Well, sometimes I feel like going up to Canada, but just checking it out, but not really.
No. No, not really. It's fine. You got to stay. I appreciate the lyrics on your Casual Dots records because you seem like you're interested in affecting positive change and speaking out. So, and I hope we'll get into that. I hope that is that a fair generalization?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. We'll get into it more as we go. I'll move on to other people on this call. Kathy, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Nice to see you, Kathy. Where in the world are you?
Nice to see you too. I'm in Brooklyn, New York.
Nice. How are things going in Brooklyn for you today?
Pretty good. It's weirdly warm. It's like 64 degrees for some reason. So yeah, it's nice.
Now in Canada, because we practice Celsius, 64 degrees would be intolerably
hot. I have no idea.
Yeah, that's that like the high end
cooked, right?
Yeah, we absolutely. We say when it's like 30 degrees in the summer, we're like, oh my God, this is intolerable.
Yeah.
But you just undertook, withstood some sort of ice storm winter situation on the East Coast of the States. Is that right?
Yeah. I feel like we kind of escaped it in New York because we're just far enough east that we kind of missed it, but it did get down to like 8 degrees, which I guess, I don't know what that is in Celsius, like negative something.
Right.
Right.
But yeah, we didn't get any snow. We didn't, you know, everything froze, but we didn't get like the ice storm that they got, but you didn't have to go very far east. I mean, west or north to get, you know, they got, Buffalo got, I don't know how many feet of snow.
So. Yeah. I saw that. That's what I was wondering about.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Well, you've got some, I've talked to people in Brooklyn during some of these extreme weather events, and Brooklyn seems volatile weather-wise all of a sudden. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. And that's not something that it was like not advertised as such when we moved here, but like the month that we moved here, there were two tornadoes that came through our neighborhood. So it was like October or something of 2010. And so that was shocking. And there's actually been a few tornadoes come through and hurricanes. I don't know, even like 3 or 4 hurricanes have hit here. So, yeah, I wasn't really expecting that. It's like the Florida of the Northeast.
I don't think of New York.
It's
that
really
way.
Weird.
It is odd. And I wish you the best there, because I know there's been flooding and leaking. Rain.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, New York's not really built for this kind of weird weather.
Now, what brought you to New York? Where are you from originally again?
Well, originally, as growing up as a kid until high school, at the end of high school, I was in Vancouver, Washington, which is not Vancouver, Canada.
Oh, right.
So it's like both Vancouver and Washington need explanation, because if you say Washington, people think Washington, D.C. If you say Vancouver, people think you're Canadian. So
Yes.
Vancouver, Washington, nobody's ever heard of. So that's it just is. But it's right by Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
So that's where I went to high school.
Right. And then you ended up in D.C.
I ended up in D.C. So after college, at the end of college, Bikini Kill started. And then basically like 2 days after I graduated, we just got in the van and went on tour and drove straight across the country on tour. And we basically just moved to D.C. Like, we never came back.
Oh.
I mean, we did eventually, but it was like I lived there for I don't know how many years, a couple years.
Right. Okay.
Years.
So you.
And then I ended up moving back for like 10 years.
Moving
so
it's back
kind of all over the place.
Moving
to
back
DC.
To DC, right. Okay.
Yeah, because we kind of like ping pong back and forth. Some of us moved back to Olympia, and then it's a little, there was a time where it was a little confusing where people lived.
Well, even as we're speaking here, we have someone in Baltimore, Maryland. You're in Brooklyn, not very close together, if I know my American geography. And then joining us on the call as well, Steve, are you there?
I am here. Yeah, I'm in London right now. So.
What is with this band? You're called the Casual Docs, but if I were to look at a map, it would not be casual at all. It'd be very confusing.
No, you know, the name's ironic. It's not casual organizing all three of us to kind of play. You know, we did all live in the same city for a while, but I've been in London, for a long time, nearly 2 decades. So,
to the same city, I'm just going to guess it was D.C.?
D.C. We're all kind of living in D.C. when we first started out. And then we spent some time in L.A. only a couple months. And then that's kind of it. We've been, or like as far as living in the same town, you know, and then when we get together every once in a while. But yeah, it's kind of, we're spread out, to say the least.
Well, I mean, at least between what Christina and Kathy are talking about, mostly, well, let's say they're on the same continent, at least. What prompted you? What prompted you to move to London?
Oh, my wife's English, and, you know, we're going back and forth of traveling. I was living in D.C. and kind of going back and forth, and so I just thought, you know, one of us has to move, and it turned out to be me. So, I really didn't expect to kind of move here, but now that I've been here, it kind of seems unimaginable to kind of move back, to be honest. I've been here long enough that it's like, wow, okay, I like it. So,
yeah, I mean, sociopolitically, are you okay? Did you ever ponder? I was asking Christina if she ever pondered leaving the States, and I was kind of getting at just the political climate. Hasn't been an easy road in England, I'm gathering.
No, well, England and America. I don't know. It's tough to say. The Brexit it feels like Brexit has really hit recently because it just feels like I have some family that live in near Dover, and all the kind of the you know, the trucks are backed up. It just feels like a very much an island, and politics is kind of crumbling in on itself right now. But yeah. Then I think of America. I don't know. It's tough to really kind of sum up politically what's been happening in the past.
Well, if any of this line of questioning is confusing to anyone on this call, I should say that I'm trying to get in good with Tourism Canada. I want you all to move here. That is the subtext for highlighting how terrible everything is. No, I'm kidding. But I'm just teasing. Well, let's get into the origin story of this wonderful band that I will be frank with you. I didn't know a whole bunch about until relatively recently. I got a text from my friend Guy. Kathy, you know Guy, is that right?
Yes, I do.
You're familiar with Guy? He's your husband. He's your husband, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. So Guy is very nice to me and generous, and he tells me about this band, The Casual Dots. I'm like, that sounds familiar. And then he says, can I put some records in the mail for you? And I say, sure. So then I get the records and I love them. I just love them. I felt so happy to get these things in the mail, not just because they're from Guy. I spent some time with them. It was just fun sitting on the couch, reading the lyric sheet and listening to, my life is frantic and busy. And when I get to do these things, I relish them. And so it was very exciting for me. Christina, can you tell us a little bit about the origin story of The Casual Dots? I've done a little bit of digging here about geography, but how did this band come together by your reckoning?
Well, I grew up in the D.C. area after six, and I remember when I first met Kathy, Bikini Kill came and stayed in my house. It was a group house, the embassy of the Nation of Ulysses, actually. So I knew her from then. And Steve later on moved to D.C. Actually, I met Steve at a wedding through mutual friends out in California, in San Francisco. Ah. And for some reason, I always thought, like, Steve would be a cool drummer to play with. And I always thought that in the back of my mind. And then one day, like, years later, Kathy and Steve were like, hey, we should jam. So we got together in my weird practice space that was kind of under the porch in Washington, D.C. And we just started making noise, and we did that several times. We never talked, we just jammed, and we sort of made noise. And at first I was like, I mean, it sounds okay, but I don't know what's going on. And then one day we started working on a cover, and then it just gelled. And
what was the cover?
Bumblebee.
Oh, right, that which is on your first record.
And after that, it was like we could just play together without even talking and come up with songs, and it's kind of amazing.
I appreciate you being on a podcast, given your hesitation to speak. It seems like you have a slight aversion to talking, based on what you're describing. Yeah, no, I'm kind of making a joke. I like the fact that you're like, we never even spoke. We just started playing music, never had to say a word.
Yeah.
So some sort of telepathy is what you're getting at.
It seems like it. I mean, that's something that's actually, like, I really like about this band, is that all the other bands you get in and someone takes charge and they're like, we're going to do this and that, and you're sort of, or you're the one who's like, come on, let's do this. But this band, it just sort of formed. It was just, it was nonverbal.
That's lovely. First,
we did speak words to each other. Just
we had conversations, but it wasn't like we had to like talk out the songs or talk about what we were going to do or whatever. We just all just started playing.
Yeah, I don't even think we brought in parts or anything like that.
No, never.
I don't think we've never brought in parts, have we?
No.
No.
Also, we've tried, it hasn't worked. You know what I mean? So you just have to accept the logic of the situation that's inherent. So it was just like, yeah, okay. This is the most we probably talked about it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there was never any preconceived idea about what we were going to do. Yeah. As far as I know.
it's very interesting. It's interesting that you say this, because as I listen to a song off the latest record, the song Gypsum Mortar comes to mind, because as someone who's played with people and kind of knows how songs come about, there's a looseness to that arrangement that I think is a testament to what you're talking about. It sounds like people just going for it and being like, yep, that's the idea, that's good. Because if you actually think of that arrangement, it's a little hard to pin down what the structure might be. On the one hand, because I think it's marvelous. I love the guitar interplay in this band, but I'm just going to keep talking because I'm worried I've insulted you by saying you don't work hard on your songs. Do you know where I'm coming from? There's like an impulsive... Kathy, does that resonate with you, the kind of impulsive aspect of what Christina's describing?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's how we wrote the songs. But to be fair, I mean, we played that song, not the same, but I mean, it is written. It's not, it wasn't like a one-time jam thing. So it's like, you know, there's however many 14 takes of it, and they kind of all sound the same. So it's like, we definitely wrote it to go like that. I mean, but yeah, I mean, when we wrote it, it was definitely like a jam session that's how it ended up. And we would be like, oh, I like how that you came in on that, you know, this weird upbeat or something. Let's keep that.
Yeah.
A lot of the songs actually, though, I didn't even have parts for when we went into the studio, and we would just record it. I didn't have set parts. We'd been jamming on it, but I didn't know what I was going to do.
Hmm.
Gypsum Mortar, we did, though.
So I've picked the absolute worst example of to try to prove my thesis. I'm sorry. No, but that comes across. Like, I like the fact that I can hear the creation in the songs a bit. Like, that's what I'm getting at. And it sounds like that's something that you rely on, that getting in the room and figuring things out together. I just want to hit upon a couple of things you said, Christina. What bands did you see Steve playing in when you thought, oh, that's someone I would like to play with at some point? And within that, what bands were you in or have been in at the time when you were kind of contemplating what your next moves might be? Sorry, sort of two questions. Do you remember where you saw Steve playing, first of all?
I can't remember. I was thinking about this actually the other day, but was Deep Lust was after or before?
That was after the wedding. When I moved to, I met you when I was still living on the West Coast. So you probably saw Deep Lust first. Yeah.
I was actually thinking about that, and I was like, why did I think he would be so good to be in a band with? But I must have known. Hmm. I mean, I must have seen you play. We used to have project things where, like party shows where people would play a few songs. Might have been one of those. I had some of those at my house on Irving Street.
We did one with I think that's when we first played together, Christina. That's when I'm remembering, with Angie, and we did some covers for a famous monster thing.
Was there a wedding band at this wedding? Steve, did you play in the wedding band?
You know what? It's funny that the wedding that we're talking about, there was a surf band that was playing, but, you know, and they were great, actually. It was incredible. But no, I wasn't in the band. I was just goofing at the wedding, you know, with actually Kathy and Christina in Guy. So, yeah, I remember that.
Okay, nice.
It was nice because it was also on the top of the Maritime Museum in San Francisco. Sorry, you don't really need to know that detail, but it was a while ago.
No, it's,
and you can see Alcatraz.
You can see Alcatraz, and it was pretty great. You know, it was exciting.
The tone you want for a wedding, right?
Is that a good omen for a wedding? You can see the very famous
last. So I don't know.
Man, okay, well, that's interesting. Yeah. And so, following up, Christina, just for people listening, what bands have you been in prior to the Casual Dots?
Well, I started off with a band called Hazmat, and then that turned into Autoclave and added a couple members, and then Slant Six and Quixotic.
Okay. So some of those bands at least have a Discord connection, pretty steeped in the DC scene, I'm gathering.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you have any memory of what prompted you to get into music making yourself? Songwriting, playing guitar?
My dad gave me a guitar when I was 8. I didn't really learn it really well back then. And then, you know, of course, I had two records. I had a Beatles record and I had a Crazy Horse Neil Young record that I never listened to, but I listened to the Beatles. I mean, it seems like this is everyone's story now, like, it seems kind of cliche, but yeah, I listened to the Beatles like constantly and thought about being in a band from being like 8. But then when I was 14, I babysat my parents' friend's children, and he was French and he got deported. And when he left, he gave me this fretless bass that I started on, and I still have it. And that sort of set me on. Then I started going to shows in, you know, around DC. And I do remember seeing Rites of Spring for the first time at Food for Thought and being like, okay, I'm going to do this.
Wow. I mean, it's a cliche, but I've told this story a few times, maybe a few hundred times by now. But yeah, the Beatles, my cousin got me into, the reason I'm into music is because my cousin got me, played me a Beatles compilation. Right. Rock and Roll Music Volume 1. So for some reason, this band, the Beatles, very popular. very influential on a lot of musicians somehow. They must be half decent. So that's where I'm coming from too. No, that's interesting.
And very, very interesting, very accessible for kids.
Yes, that's part of it though. Although when you hear the early Beatles and John screaming, I realize, like Twist and Shout even or whatever, I realized there was an edge to it that I was drawn to as well. Because that compilation I'm describing would have been the earlier stuff. It wasn't like the psychedelic period. So I think I was drawn to the edginess of it as well.
Apparently my mom played Rubber Soul for me before I was born. She said she would sit in front of the stereo and listen to it. So,
well, this might explain your penchant for great hooks, if I may, over-flatter you in front of your colleagues. Kathy, we've gotten a little bit of a sense of the dynamic between Christina and Steve. How did you enter the fold? I think it's safe to say, are a very busy musician yourself. How did you enter the fold here in the Casual Dots?
Well, my memory is that I was at a party with Christina, and we ended up talking, and I think that I just said, you know, we should play guitar together. I hadn't been in a band that played guitar, where I played guitar, since the Frumpies, which was like 1993 or 4 or something.
Yeah.
So I was sort of like, I think Bikini Kill maybe had just broken up. It was like 97 or something, and I had just moved to DC. And so I was at this party, and it occurred to me that I wanted to start a band where I played guitar. And I was thinking that I love the way that Christina plays guitar. So I was thinking it might be cool to be in a band with another guitar player and no bass.
Yeah.
So I think I approached her and was like, yeah, we should just play together and see what happens. But, you know, I don't remember if it was, do you remember it was like the Lady Fest was happening right then? And so we might have actually started playing in order to play that Lady Fest. It was sort of like we had a goal, which was like, oh, we need to write enough songs to play this Lady Fest show in 2001 or 2. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, 2002. Yeah.
2002,
yeah.
I think. But we did play, we played for a while without having any objective. But then I think when we were like, oh, we got to play this show, let's do this cover song.
So yeah, I think they asked us if we had anything that we were doing musically, and we're like, well, we have this thing that we just started doing, but we don't really have any songs. And then, so yeah, I think it focused us to like write some songs or something.
Was that cover song Bumblebee?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sorry, was that all you had ready? Did you just have to play the one song?
No, we wrote some songs.
We only played like a few songs though, didn't we?
Yeah, we played some songs.
I have no memory.
It
was outdoors. It was in DuPont Circle.
Yeah. And we played some songs that we've never played again. You know what I mean?
Is that right?
Yeah.
We did?
Because really? We played this instrumental, I remember, that I wrote on guitar, and it was really short and quick. And it's like, because I've been playing guitar recently, and it's one string, and it's, you know, very simple. But we did that.
And then did you play guitar on that?
No, you guys played it. That was the funny thing. Like, I wrote it, and then I was just like, I think I remember showing it to you, Christine, or, you know, it was just like a very quick one-off thing. And, but that was one of the songs, but we never played it again. But we had, I think about 4 or 5 songs or something that we played in this, you know, for our first show. It was great. Cause it was just like in the middle of DuPont Circle in DC, which was, you know,
in the middle of the day.
Yeah. In the middle of the day.
People having lunch.
Yeah.
Is that unusual, Steve, for you to bring a guitar part to this band?
Yeah. Cause I'm not a guitarist. You know, I mean, I play guitar and I've been playing badly for a long, long time. I've been playing guitar and I'm like, huh, I just remember playing this riff. I'm like, wow, we played that like 20 years ago or whatever.
You and I are similar because I've been trying to play guitar since I was 16, but then gravitated towards drums because everyone in my social circle was trying to be this superstar guitar player,
right.
And there was no one to play. No one would play the drums. I'm like, I can try it, and I took to it.
Yeah,
but yeah, I've been playing more guitar certainly since the pandemic.
And yeah,
I don't mean to, and I probably got it wrong. I was listening to your record yesterday, and I had my guitar on, and I think I figured out Velvet Fields, the main riff, just by myself.
Hey, that's
and
pretty
I was
good.
Like, oh, I'm progressing. I figured out a Casual Dot song just by accident.
Hey,
and
hey,
so
nice.
That's you play enough and you get there, I suppose.
Yeah.
Kathy, just to go back to you before I go to Steve and his little origin story there. You mentioned wanting to play guitar. You are known, I guess, predominantly as a bass player. Is that the distinction you were making?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was the first band I was in was Bikini Kill, and I played bass mostly. I mean, you know, we switch around and I play guitar in some songs, but mostly I play bass.
Bikini Kill is the first band you have ever been in?
Yeah. Crazy,
that's
right?
That's
well,
seems
actually,
a bit-
I was in, I don't even know if you would call it a band, but so I lived in Portland for one summer, and I lived in this house that the Calamity Jane girls lived in. And so I was in a project band with Gilly, and I think Megan was in it too. I can't remember. I think we had two basses. That's how weird it was. I think we both played bass. And that was the first like live performance that I had ever done. But I think that we just maybe practiced the day of the show and wrote like one song and got up on stage and there was nobody there. So I'm not sure I would really consider that a band, but yeah, well, that was the first time I ever played music like in a rock format in front of people. I used to do piano recitals, but yeah.
I see. Do you think it's weird that of the at least two bands we've discussed, well, sorry, we've talked about three in your context, but two of the bands you've been in featured two people on the same instrument. That's a little unusual. Two bassists.
I guess that's true. I hadn't thought of that.
And now two guitarists. So something you like tandem something. I'm going to psychoanalyze you now. You feel like you need
maybe
to
I don't
have...
want to like step up as like my own. Like I am the only bass player. Like, no, I need another one there.
And so I appreciate that. No, that's fascinating. And it speaks to your talent, I suppose.
Something on that, one of the reasons I was really into the idea of having two guitars is because I was really into that band, the Gorries, at the time.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Me too. Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, exactly what I want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cool thing about... did you get to see the Gorries at all?
I saw them way more recently. It was incredible.
Okay. So not at the time
so
that
much
you,
fun.
You were listening to them on record and then thought... This is an interesting dynamic. I'd like to explore this myself.
Yeah.
I see. I find sometimes
I think they were playing out back then.
Right. I sometimes find that when you see a band do something like that, it really resonates with you. But like I'm going to go home and figure that out and call my friend and see if we can do something. But yeah, that's fascinating in itself. All right. Well, I appreciate that. Steve, let's get to your origin story as a musician here. And like I say, I've now gotten a sense of how this band has come together. How did you get into playing music and being into music, I suppose, even as a little kid? What's your Beatles tape that got you going?
Oh, you know, it wasn't Beatles. You know, my parents, Roy Orbison and Everly Brothers, you know, just listening to records at my folks. But then I got... I have an older brother, and he used to get Rolling Stone magazine, and he had, and actually it is a Beatles story because it's like the greatest records of all time, and number one was Sgt. Pepper's, and so I'm like, okay, I know that.
I don't agree. That's not even their best record. It's fine.
That was my Beatles record. I had a similar, I had a similar thing with Christina where my parents had like three records or something.
Right.
One was like Jim Croce, one was Sgt. Pepper. And then the other was like Gordon Lightfoot or something. So obviously I'm going to listen to Sgt. Pepper out of those three. But I listened to that record all the time. That was my Beatles record.
I'm obviously it's an amazing record, but I was just shaking my head because I like Revolver and the White Album.
Oh yeah, of course.
Well, yeah. Once you know those records, you're like, oh, these are better.
Yeah.
But like, if all you have is Sgt. Pepper, then that's,
no, you're just like, what?
It's good.
Well, also there was even at that age, there was just always been so much hype around Sgt. Pepper. So if you're in Rolling Stone, if you're at an age where you're like, well, they know what they're talking about.
Well, also, it was the funny thing is I was just like, you know, I've heard that record quite a bit, you know, and then it was when so number two was Nevermind the Bollocks by the Sex Pistols.
Oh, yeah.
Then I was just like became obsessed with kind of music, like, you know, also I was lucky enough to live in a town with a very good record store. And so I used to just for years, just look at record covers for, you know, that's what I did for kicks, you know. Then I finally figured out what they actually sound like, you know, whoever it may be, the Meat Puppets or whoever, you know, you'd see something, you know. So
I used to listen to the Beatles on 45 too. I had where you could if you got sick of it, because I only had that one. Well, it was a gatefold record with the George Harrison record in it too. But if I got sick of it, I could just listen to it on 45 and sometimes even 78 speeds.
Hey, I still do that just for kicks.
I see. You would listen to LPs on just different speeds?
Well, just that. I just had the Beatles record, so I'd listen. Oh. If I got bored with it. I mean, there were three records in it because it was the blue gatefold one and it had a George Harrison record stuck in it. But yeah, if you got sick of it at 33, then you put it on 45, sometimes 78. 16 wasn't all that good though.
So wait a minute. Did somebody stick a George record in this record for you? Was it a manufacturing mistake? Why did you have a George Harrison record in your Beatles?
Well, I think that record just got left behind because my parents used to rent out a room to like younger hippies, and and then that record got left behind somehow, and it just had that record in it by accident.
I see.
I don't know why I had the Crazy Horse record, but I wasn't really into it. It's live.
Well, was it Live Rust or something like that?
Live Rust. Yeah.
I love that record. That's like one of my favorite.
That's great. Yeah.
That's like a.
But I think as a kid, Neil Young is one of those things. Yeah. Yeah.
But he sings so high. He sings almost like a cartoon character. I would think you'd be like,
yeah.
No, I'm not gonna delve into this. Anyway, all right. Well, this is sorry, Steve. I mentioned I became a drummer by default. I really appreciate your
likewise.
I appreciate your drumming on these records, and this is what I'm most familiar with in terms of the way you play. How did you get into drumming?
Oh, because I couldn't play anything else really all that well. Like, I was a bad guitarist, and I joined a band. I lied and said I could play guitar to join this band. And when I got to this band practice, they say, what chord, what key are we playing it in? And I was just like, I knew how to make noise out of the guitar. That was pretty much my only. And then I was just, then the guy that I was playing with, he was just like, oh, we'll start a band outside of this. Because they were serious musicians. We were into punk rock and goofing off. And so I just moved to playing drums. Yeah, that's it. It was just because I'm not that good at guitar or bass.
When you lie about saying you know how to play guitar, what are you thinking at this point? That's like George Santos level delusion of like, I'll just show up and I'll get away with it. How did you think you're going to get away with that?
I don't know. I really don't know. To be honest. And so I just showed up like a friend. I was really interested in punk rock, and I'm from a very small town in Connecticut. So there was just like, maybe three people who would probably be in. And so the one guy's like, yeah, I can show up. My brother had a guitar, so I just borrowed it. And then we went to this basement, and then I was found out, and I just kind of sat in the corner for a while. Okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like ashamed. I got ashamed for it because it's just like, you liar. You know, I'm like, well, I could technically make some noise, you know.
This sounds exactly like what I read about George Santos in the chamber yesterday, just sitting by himself.
Oh, really?
No one would talk to him. Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. You're not George Santos. You're clearly better.
Sometimes when you're a kid, you think you know how to play guitar because you can make noise on it. And then you go in and you play with someone and you're like, actually, I don't really know how to do this.
Yes. That's pretty much what happens.
That's true. I forgot. Yeah, my son does this all the time. I know how to do that. I'm like, no, you do not. Prove it. Can't do it. You can't do it. It's amazing. Anyway, no, I appreciate that. I think you just wanted to be like me. You just wanted to be involved. At some point,
exactly.
you reach an age and you're like, I've told this story too, and it's a brief Beatles story, and that because I got so obsessed with them that I would read and watch every documentary and read every book and every magazine. Right. I just became a student of the Beatles at a very early age, and I was reading a thing about them, and it said that they were supposed to do a Scandinavian tour, but Ringo had a stomach flu, so they had to get someone else to play with them. Now, keep in mind, I thought these people were superheroes. And then right. you read a little thing about how the Beatles get sick. They're human right. beings. And then that was sort of my entry point into like, oh, maybe I could do this. And it sounds like you maybe had a bit of that impulse of like, I want to do this. I think I can. I'm going to bluff my way into saying I can for now and then figure it out.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think I feel like I'm bluffing my way with lots of things in life that I, you know.
You got to fake it.
I can't believe that I'm an adult in a certain way, you know, but I survived. I can't, you know, it's no, you know, fake innocence. It's,
You do have to fake it till you make it. That's what they say. Fake it till you make it.
Yeah, fake it till you make it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I'm sure we all do that a little bit. Christina, can we get to the point where the Casual Dots went from, I think, a bit of a happenstance gathering to, you know, playing Ladyfest, whatever else, to, yeah, I actually want to put this on its feet and see what we can do together. And are you the primary lyricist, by the way, Christina?
Yeah.
Do you collaborate?
Yeah, I write the lyrics. I ask for help sometimes, but I'm better at writing lyrics in the room with people. So I've had to, you know, ask for encouragement.
I see. When you say in the room with people, do you literally have a...
While you're practicing.
But do you literally... Are you writing like on a pad or are you just riffing into the microphone until you're like, oh, that I kind of like that turn of phrase?
Yeah. I just sort of sing and then the things come out.
I see.
And then I could fill it in to make it make sense.
Okay. So where I was coming from with that convoluted attempt at a question was, can you talk a little bit about how and why you thought, no, this can be a thing. We'll do this together. And then within that, did you feel like you wanted to say certain things in an overarching sense with these songs? I always think it's interesting when a band coalesces around a cover, because ideally that cover might speak to its aesthetic, a shared sort of feeling about what you all are interested in. And I don't know if that's true of Bumblebee necessarily. But again, I've made this even more convoluted. Let's get back to my question. Can you talk a little bit about when you thought this was going to be a going concern and what you wanted to accomplish as a songwriter with the Casual Dots?
Bumblebee was on a mixed CD that Steve made. So we were all listening to it. It was something like, I don't know, easy to play. I think that's why another reason why we did it. As far as expressing things through lyrics and what the songs mean, they're sort of just like things from my unconscious, just or what I've been looking at and thinking about. And, you know, for the first record, like, was, it's not straight out political, but there's a lot of ideas in it. And it's just sort of what was going on, like the Iraq War went on and things that my dad said ended up in the lyrics here and there. And then, of course, lots of just personal issues and ways of thinking about things. Perspectives. The second record was, I was just watching a lot more politics, like paying attention, and it's just sort of what events that happened in Baltimore and on the news and all over, feelings about it, but just sort of letting them come up unconsciously to a certain extent and then filling in the rest. It's sort of just what I was focusing on at the time of writing the song.
You mentioned something that your father said. Was your household kind of steeped in, I guess, politics or sociocultural concerns at all? Like, was that part of your upbringing?
Definitely. My dad was, it was like NPR all the time, but liberal ideas and just constantly talking about politics and where my mom and dad just having conversations all the time about it and the radio always being on, my dad always coming in and if no one was else around, he would just like talk to you about politics.
Right.
So it was like, it wasn't what I was directly focusing on, but I just kind of absorbed it for like years.
I see. Kathy, when Christina says she seeks help in a practice space or in lyric writing, can you elaborate upon that? Like, what kinds of questions get raised as this process begins? And then within that, do you have perspectives on her as a songwriter? I know this can be awkward with everyone in the same space because you're probably going to say things you never say to each other to your face because your band doesn't talk. We've already established that. But can you talk a little bit about that process of lyric writing in this band from your perspective?
Yeah, I feel like with the first record, we didn't help Christina with the lyrics at all on the first record. I feel like, unless I'm misremembering, I feel like she wrote all the lyrics on that record. Mm-hmm. The second record, this latest record, I feel like some of the songs, so it was written over a period of time. You know, it's like six or seven of the songs were recorded in 2004, and then the rest were just recorded over the intervening years. And so the songs that we recorded back in 2004, they had lyrics because we had toured on those songs. But not, I don't think they were solid lyrics. Christina's shaking her head no.
Yeah.
But anyway, there were words that were sung during our shows that in my mind were the lyrics. But then when we got done with the tour and we recorded the basic tracks for those songs, we didn't do the vocals for a variety of reasons. And then we all split and Christina went to LA and Steve went to London. And so we basically didn't finish those songs. And so when we came back to finishing those songs to turn it into the record, it was sort of like those lyrics maybe didn't fit the songs anymore. Like, it had, so much time had gone right by. And so then she was, you know, listening to the songs and writing the lyrics from the period of time that we were at then. And so I think, like, when she's saying that she needs to be in the room, I think that it was like we weren't all in the room at that point because we'd already written and recorded those songs. So I think that's probably why it was harder.
I see.
or something.
I see.
So yeah, and then we were all practicing those songs at my house in Brooklyn, and I think some of the songs she just had like missing spaces or something, and so we were kind of like talk about what the song was about and think about different word combinations that might fit.
I see. Christina, just to, before I get your perspective on this, Steve, Christina, can you pinpoint the years that Kathy was kind of navigating there in terms of when some of these songs for, I haven't even got to this. The band has an interesting trajectory from my vantage point. It seems to have started about 20 years ago. We've established that with the Ladyfest show. I put out a record. I don't have it in front of me. What year did the first record come out? 2004?
I think it was four.
Four.
Yeah.
And then so Kathy's just saying a lot of the songs that we're hearing on this new record emanate from that period. However, as I check my calendar, it's now 2023. And I believe this latest record came out 2022. Yes, in the fall.
Correct. Yeah.
Yep.
You don't have to be a mathematician here, folks. quite a gap there. Can you talk about, first of all, what I was getting to, Christina, can you talk about when you started updating the 2004 songs, if you will, exactly, to kind of put a time and place to what Kathy was just talking about? And then within that, we might as well get to the elephant in the room. Why the heck? It sounds like it's geography, but why the heck was there such a long gap between activity? Can you speak to those things?
Yeah. The beginning of your question is sort of about the lyrics. I used to sing things when we toured back in 2004 and 2005, but I never had anything set for those second set of songs. A lot, actually, a couple of them, like three of them were kind of instrumentals in my mind, the ones that we recorded in the beginning. And so I never had anything set. So when we started putting the record together, I kind of had to start from scratch with the lyrics. And we did get together. We got together in 2011 and started playing. But that was sort of when I was in LA and I just moved back to Baltimore and Steve came visited. So we started playing and we just immediately wrote more songs. And we were like, everything that we played sounds great.
Yeah.
We have like, you know, enough to finish this record because we wrote all these songs in this weekend. And so then we got together a couple times over the years. And when we would get together, I would be able to write like a few songs. In 2016, we played some shows and I wrote a bunch of lyrics like in that time while we were playing in the practice space at Kathy's house and then playing those shows. And then we recorded them. So there was a whole set of lyrics for some of the songs, like Frequency of Fear was sort of like, I don't know what I was reading about at the time, but it was at the very beginning of Trump's vie for candidacy. I mean, it was still like the Republican Party was trying to choose their candidate. It was like in January 2016. But this whole idea of what was gonna happen sort of came into my mind and I started writing that. So that one was back then. And then, you know, a couple other of the songs were from back then. And then over the next 3 years, I would go up to New York. Steve would come and we'd work on it and I would write something and we'd record. So
I see. Okay. So
what was the second part of the question?
Well, the second part was I landed on it's likely geography and life stuff, but I was just asking why such a gap between records and activity in the casual dots in terms of just how long it's taken to get a second record out, for example.
I would say geography for one thing, because while I was in LA, it's like, I'm in LA, Kathy's in New York, Steve's in London, and everybody else had different musical things and, you know, family and stuff like that.
If you put the word casual in your band name, it gives you a little slight.
Yeah, it's going to live out in a certain way. It's true. We also didn't want to flood the market. You know what I mean?
Don't rush it.
Yeah. You know, sometimes, you know, if you're a fan of something, you have to buy all the double records that cost, you know, $30. They come out every 3 months. So I say two records after 20 years. I think, yeah, that's not flooding the market.
It's
not much of a
casually, temporarily casual, I guess, is what we're getting at there. Christina, does that about capture why the band's trajectory is as it is?
I think so. I mean, it's definitely a casual aspect. There's no urgency. But
It's funny you say this because I feel a lot of urgency in the music. Like I it really speaks to me on that level. Like I like it. It's a call to arms, but there's fun. I invoked, I think maybe before we started rolling, I invoked Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet, which is a band I really love. I don't know if you're familiar with them, Christina, particularly. Canadian.
Yeah.
Going back to your Canadian roots. I hear a bit of them in here and some other things that I really love. Like I just love the sound of it, if that makes any sense to you.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I'm glad we agree that it's an amazing sound. Thank you very much. Now, Steve, I wanted
I haven't listened to them in a long time, but I do remember Shadowy Man and Shadowy Planet.
They get unfairly pigeonholed. I mean, I'm looking at, what's their box set called? Where is it? It's down here somewhere. It's their box set is called, something like, No, We're Not a Fucking Surf Band. Because right. They get pigeonholed with that thing, even though they were doing some really, really innovative stuff. And I was just talking to Don Pyle from the band on the show about a new photo book he's got out. And he brought up the fact that in their original incarnation, the dynamic was a bass, guitar, drums, but the bass player played lead parts, basically. Like it was basically having two guitars. It was quite inventive, I think, for its time. And, he wasn't bragging. He was just saying, like, it's interesting. Like, the late Reed Diamond would play bass like he was playing guitar, and that created this interesting tension. And I think that kind of speaks to why maybe I see some parallels between them and your band. Obviously, it's different instrumentation, but it's that mentality of we've got two sort of melodic things going on at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's funny that he plays bass like guitar. Is that what you're saying? Because I started out as a bass player in Hazmat and Autoclave, and I play guitar like a bass.
Right.
And for some reason, everyone thinks that's surf sound. I never tried to go for a surf sound, but...
Yeah, I hesitated to make this comparison because I wondered if you've gotten the same kind of pigeonholing in the Casual Dots.
Yeah. But
I definitely hear that, that spirit anyway. And that's why I was very careful to say like Shadowy Men, not like surf rock, because I don't think of Shadowy Men as a surf rock band, even though they're pigeonholed as such. So that's all. That's where I was coming from. I'm trying to be careful with my words despite all my bumbling. So sorry if I am too confusing. Steve, I never got to ask you about how we've already established that you're not a great guitar player, but every once in a while you come up with some. Have you contributed lyrically in any way? Have you been called upon to give advice to Christina about where a song might be heading?
No, not particularly, to be honest, but only just because it's just, I don't know. I mean, Christine's asked. I haven't. I have no bearing on the lyrics necessarily.
Does she seek advice? Do you offer counsel? Something?
I think. But it's been so long. I remember when she was writing. I think I had to leave when we were she was writing the lyrics to these, because a lot of these songs were I've heard as instrumentals for nearly a decade. Yeah. So I was kind of like, it was a nice surprise also to hear them with lyrics after such a long time, because I'm like, oh my, it was incredibly exciting. But I wasn't around when she was there recording her vocals. So,
I see.
I mean, we don't get together all that, it is just a logistic kind of, it's difficult at times for me to be there for more than a couple of weeks, I was just,
Okay. In terms of and I apologize for focusing so much maybe on the new record, but I'm a topical person. I want to ask you a little bit about the structure of the new record. Kathy, I'm going to ask for your perspective on this. It seems to me that side one and side two are quite distinctive. In fact, I mean, I feel like the first side feels a bit more universal in terms of some of the messaging. Christina, don't worry. I'm going to ask you more specifically. I just wanted Kathy's perspective on this, and she can tell me if I'm wrong. Side two, I think, actually features a bit of a suite. It seems like a very personal batch of songs about the loss of someone specific. There's some mourning there. And I juxtapose that with what I hear on side one, which feels a little more universal. And in the sense that it's sort of about sociopolitical stuff that maybe a lot of us can relate to. And then it seems more personal on side two. Kathy, do you want to shoot me down on this theory, or do you feel like that's come?
I'm going to shoot you down.
Please do. Let me know.
No, but so I can't remember which one of us did the sequencing. I think Christina, you did the sequencing for the record. And my memory is that it didn't have to do with the topic matter. I think that it had more to do with which song would sound better after the next song, you know, like how they would sound together, but I might be wrong about that. Probably Christina could probably answer that question better than me.
So you shot me down from a place of not really knowing. Let's just
I mean, from my perspective, it wasn't it wasn't intentionally divided into thematic.
Fair enough. It was aesthetic sound. The sound of the songs flowing together is what your thought
is. That's my memory. That's
Christina, can you either shoot me down or put me back in the sky? I need to know if I'm on the right track.
It was definitely how the songs sounded together from one song to the next and how it flows, how the record, you know, if you listen to it from beginning, because we all used to listen to vinyl. So we're used to the sort of not just choosing a song here and there and or having it shuffle. So it was important for how the songs sounded and how they flow together. But I think it did. The second half seems more introspective. I think the whole record is pretty personal.
Yeah.
Like Gypsum Mortar is pretty personal.
Yep.
Live for Yourself is pretty personal. But yeah, somehow the sad songs ended up on the second half of the record.
Again, this is just my music consumer / music critic's ear, probably. When I listen to Descending Palindrome in the morning after, what it does for me, not knowing you at all, not knowing where these songs really come from, what it does for me is it feels like these songs in particular are all about the same subject. They might not be at all, but I'm just telling you that that's how they made me feel. Like this is directed at someone with a sadness that someone was lost. Are you saying that that's probably not, and I don't mean to pry, of course, but are you saying that's not necessarily the case?
They're all about different things, but... I'm going to say something that sounds kind of weird, but each song has a different color for me. Mm. And Descending, Palindrome, and The Morning After all have a really similar color scheme. So in that way, it's the same. But so to me, the color means feel, I guess. So they both. But, you know, Descending, I've seen reviews where people are like, oh, this is about a lost relationship or something like that. No, the relationship thing is just a metaphor for a whole bunch of different stuff in life. It's not actually about a particular relationship or anything. But it just, each line has like a picture from different people and different times. And it's sort of like an overall looking back.
For pronoun usage in particularly in what I would, I'm not, again, I don't mean to pigeonhole you guys at all, but when I come from kind of a post-punk background, like I remember we were talking about the Beatles and some other things, and I don't know, there's something about the you. When a songwriter says you or I or whatever, for me, they have different connotations. Like I never think of Revolution by the Beatles, where John Lennon is singing like, if you want money for people with my, I don't know. I never really thought of that as like a specific person. Something around when I got into post-punk and playing in post-hardcore bands, I knew who I was directing some of the songs I was writing to. And when you heard, you could kind of tell, you know, where things were coming from. When you talk about the frequency of fear and now you've contextualized it as being around the dawn of Trump's ascendancy, I pick up on that. Like I can pick up on what was going on in America at that time. I don't know. What I'm getting at, I think, is sometimes these yous are more pointed and sometimes they're not. And I can hear those dynamics here on this record, if that makes any sense, Christina. I think sometimes when you speak of the you in a heated and pointed way, and sometimes it's an affectionate, longing, sentimental way. I don't have a grand point here. I just think that that's coming through a lot on this record, and it gives it a very interesting emotional tension. Does that resonate with you?
I'm trying to picture what you're saying.
I don't know if what I said made any sense, but I do. That's where I'm coming from with it. That when I say it, something feels a bit more universal, and something feels more personal. I think that's where I'm coming from with the pronoun usage and the way you're singing about these people. If that makes any sense.
So what you're saying is some of the songs seem more personal and some of them seem more universal, but it's both. All the songs are still using pronouns.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know why I took us down this road. It wasn't my plan, but yeah, that's what I'm kind of saying. Like that's
all right.
It's the tenor of your singing too. Like, I mean, the three songs I've outlined seem very emotional and sentimental. Like you're talking about a friend or a colleague, whereas some of the other songs feel like a call to arms for all of us to think about things, if that makes any sense.
Well, I'd say that Palindrome is more, you know, it's pretty obvious. It's about Brendan, who was in Quixotic. He passed the beginning of 2010.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And then the morning after is sort of like the morning after. I don't think it makes, like, if you go line by line, it doesn't make complete sense. It's not, but it was sort of, I woke up one morning, I followed this photographer that would take his bike around Baltimore and just take pictures of all different areas of Baltimore. Like, he covered the Freddie Graves thing. He covered, like, a lot of neighborhoods that, like, are in the periphery or the east side of Baltimore or the west side. Like, he would just go everywhere and take photos. And one day I woke up to a video from inside his fence where they were hosing away some blood that where a shooting had happened the night before on the other side of his fence. And it just struck me as, like, trying to just thought about it a lot. And then those words just started coming out when I was trying to write the song, just about, like, I didn't even know how to explain it exactly, yeah. But just how the, like, your vision of what's possible is so important, because if you're not given the vision to do something more than, you know, violence, or if you're conditioned by violence when you're younger, or you're just immersed in violence, it's just going to have more violence is going to happen. And I don't know. It was sort of like being removed from it, but that only being like 2 miles away from me in reality, and right. Just thoughts about it, kind of. So
yeah, to invoke a cliche and to sum up maybe where I was coming from, it does seem like the personal is political. I hesitate to say this without sounding trite, but that's what I'm picking up on. Like, that's a really interesting example, because I took that song as a very personal experience for you, but you're saying, like, you're looking at your city, you're looking at your community, and you're speaking about something that impacts you in a personal sense, but there's a little bit of objective view of how we're functioning societally, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And that seems to be a running theme in your lyric writing, and I think maybe given how you were raised, what you were exposed to in your household, maybe that informs how you write a little bit, that these things that are supposedly happening to other people actually have implications for how you're living and how your community is functioning. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Yeah. It's also commenting that, like, we see this stuff on the screen all the time, even though that happened to be a couple miles away, but we're functioning through a screen. We're seeing this violence. We're seeing this stuff happening. I don't know. It was mostly a collection of thoughts of, like, the incident that happened.
Well, as I say, it's very beautifully done, and it's very affecting. So I just wanted to say that, and I'm sorry if I bungled my way through that, but I think we made it through.
Yeah, I think so.
I want to ask you about a couple other things. I'm being mindful of the time here, but Live for Yourself is an interesting song for me because, as I see here in the lyrics, or in the liner notes, all songs by the Casual Dots, except Live for Yourself, based on You've Got to Live for Yourself by Bobby Moore and The Foremost, lyrics revised by Christina Bilotti. Now, first of all, I know this expression, you've got to live for yourself, you can't live for anybody else, from a James Brown song. Does anyone know what I'm talking about here?
It sounds familiar, but, you know, it's one of those, yeah.
So in 1960, I'm a big James Brown fan. Sorry, I'm a big fan of the music that James Brown made. In 1960, he released a song called, I made a note of this here. It's called I'll Go Crazy, James Brown, The Famous Flames. And it features the same lyrics. You got to live for yourself, yourself and nobody else. The song that you've based, your song, Live for Yourself, on is by Bobby Moore and The Foremost. It's called You've Got to Live for Yourself, 1964. So I don't mean to blow your minds here, but I tell you this. I think he took the lyrics from the James Brown song, and that's fine. Because it's a really powerful song, but here's the thing. This is a point of pride for me, because I'm like, I'm going to ask them about James Brown. We're going to have a great conversation about James Brown. Then I look this up and I'm like, wait, it's not James Brown at all, according to them. What's going on here? So anyway, can you talk a little bit, Christina, about where you heard this song and why you thought to interpolate it in this powerful, very, very powerful way? This bridge that you've rewritten in particular, really, very powerful, but can you talk about why you thought to do that?
Well, it was a song that we covered again from a compilation CD that Steve made. So,
a lot of your ideas seem to be from Steve's mixtapes. Is that a fair way?
Yeah, I'd say he makes some really good mixtapes. Like, he's good at it. And he's got, he puts in songs that, like, I don't know. It just felt right. So we used to do it pretty much the way it was, you know, the original recording. But at a time, after a while, I was like, I don't know if I exactly like this message of this song. And I don't like the repetitiveness. But other lyrics just started coming to my head. And so just wrote it. About James Brown, I did listen to that song a lot. Like, I had a James Brown compilation. The song that you mentioned.
I'll Go Crazy.
I'll Go Crazy, yeah. But I never put that connection together before.
Hey, it's another creative control miracle. How about that? I didn't mean
me
to
neither.
Do that.
I'm actually, you've got to live. Yeah, I know it. Yeah, but it's funny.
It's a key part of that song. It's not like one of his big songs, the Famous Flames and James Brown song, but I have it. I just love that era of James Brown. So it just immediately is what I thought of. Beautiful singing too here. Kathy, I believe you're credited with backup vocals. You guys do a really wonderful job of singing together, if I might say. By the way, the whole point of this conversation, Tourism Canada, butter you up, I guess is what I'm saying, but I don't mean it. No, it's really lovely, the dynamic. How do you two, I assume you work on these with Christina, Kathy, how do you guys sort of work out vocals together? Because this is a great example of you doing kind of call and response stuff, classic kind of old school pop in a sense. Do you have a lot of conversations about? I know you don't talk. I think I know the answer to this question already. But how do you come up with these things together exactly?
I don't think we came up with it. I think that's how it was on the recording. I think isn't there a call and response on the recording, Christina?
Yeah, there's a call and response. But the like notes, I think you just chose the notes, and then I chose whatever note that I thought went well with the backups.
Oh, the harmony.
Yeah,
the harmony.
Yeah. I think
really a singer. I don't like to sing. So I think it was sort of a little bit under duress, but I will sing if I'm called on to do backup vocals, but like I don't tend to choose that for myself. But yeah, on this song, I was okay doing it.
The backup vocals were recorded before the other vocals, I think, the first time. Then maybe you went back and put them on.
Not the ones that ended up on the record, though.
Yeah. But when I was singing it, it was like the old backup vocals, I think. Or no, you had you put them on before? I don't remember. The original version that we recorded a long time ago, Steve had backups on it too.
I see.
Yeah. We re-recorded all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even the whole song.
Yeah,
the
whole
track
song,
we re-recorded.
But it was like, nobody but you. I remember.
Yeah, it's really low. And you know,
that's true.
It wasn't good. You know, it didn't last. It didn't make the cut. And I can, confess up to it because it wasn't that good, you know.
Well, that's fair.
I'm
focusing on this one particular song, but Kathy, you do sing in this. You say you don't really like to sing, and I believe you invoked the phrase "under duress," which is a bit harsh.
Well, it's the same in Bikini Kill. I was basically forced to sing a couple songs in Bikini Kill because we would always have a song that nobody could figure out how to sing on. So I just got that. They were like, "Well, you have to sing on that one." So then I would have to be like sent into the studio to come up with some lyrics and sing it. But yeah, so I don't remember how this one came up. I think it was just, this is the only song I sing on though, right? I don't sing on any of the other ones.
Oh, there's nothing else?
Record.
No.
I don't think so. Do I? Yeah. No, I think it's just this one.
Even Clocks, I just had to do the backup.
That's you. Yeah. You do all the vocals on that one.
I see. Okay. So this is a real anomaly. In many regards.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I appreciate this insight into this record. The one thing I haven't asked you about is you made both of your records thus far with Guy and Don, and I wonder what they brought to the proceedings, if you will, as producers and engineers. Kathy, is it weird working with Guy, given your dynamic, or is it natural?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's always recorded people in DC, so I'm just used to the idea of him. Like, he had a studio in his basement when he lived in DC at Pirate House, and he would record bands, you know, maybe bands that couldn't afford to go into Don's or whatever. He would just record them.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, that was just kind of, I'm just used to him pitching in to record, and he loves to do it, and he's really good at it, so.
Well,
this is true.
He's the best at most things, I find, and I No, you can't be objective about that, but that's how I feel from far
no,
away.
No, I am objective. He is the best. But he's also the most important thing I feel like with recording for him is not just that he knows how to get good sounds and he knows what we probably should sound like. He knows how to do vocals and everything, but he's also just a really positive person to be in the studio with. Like, that's kind of a vulnerable time when you're in the studio doing vocals or whatever. And he's just a really, like, very supportive.
Yeah.
Very, very positive.
He recorded Quixotic too.
Oh, he did. Okay.
He used to record Quixotic.
He recorded Deep Lost. He's very good at, makes people feel at ease. Pardon me. But, you know, it is just like, it's not like you're having a whim and kind of doing something that seems you're uncertain about. You feel kind of certain about your kind of instinctual approach to almost everything, which is a very valuable thing. Because, you know, you record with some people and they're just like, you don't know what you're doing type of thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's just, but I'll get over it for you.
Or maybe they don't really get the band. You know, that's another thing where it's like you can record with people and maybe they don't really understand where the band is coming from sonically. But I feel like with Guy, he's always understood where this band in particular is coming from, like what we want to sound like.
It's interesting to hear from both Christina and Steve that Guy has recorded your other projects in the past. Like that's a long history there. That's interesting. Steve, I make the distinction that Don was the engineer and Guy was the producer. You've talked about his support, the cheerleading, the positive aspect. As a producer, did he alter the course of a song? Did he at any point or did was
no.
he? No.
No, not at all. I don't think, you know, I can't remember. You know, he's very just kind of in the back. It's very hard to be zen or, you know what I mean, and in the background and actually just be kind of blank, you know, and Guy was perfect at that. And also just like, just let you do what you want to do rather than raising an eyebrow. No, he was a pleasure to record with in Don. It was just a natural fit, you know.
Well, by the way, I don't think there's always a negative connotation with a producer being like, hey, that was great. Have you thought about making the bridge of the chorus instead? Like that kind of stuff. Christina, do you have any recollection? I don't just mean negative, like a producer, like doing nothing or being negative. I just mean like, did he have advice that maybe altered the course of any particular arrangement or anything like that? And I want to direct this to Christina.
Yeah. One thing that he really did was, you know, he'll tell you when it's not a good take. Like I've recorded with someone more recently who just like, stayed out of it and let the band decide everything. And that to me was like, I was like, no, wait, aren't you going to say like this one's good and this one's bad or at least give an opinion on it? You know, tell me what, if you thought it was good, because sometimes it's hard to have a perspective when you're recording. And then, he would have suggestions about things like, well, why don't we do this? Or, and then I remember there was one where he's like, I think you should write a second thing of lyrics to it. But I just couldn't do it. And he was fine with that. So like both ways. He's like, oh, okay, that's fine. Here's suggestions. It's okay if you don't do it. But then at the same time, it's just like, you know, you can rely on him to tell you like, no, this version is not as good as this version. That's my opinion. And be honest about it. So I liked that.
Yeah. Great. And Don.
And I should point out that we also recorded with Eli Cruz.
Yeah, I wanted to mention
on this record.
Oh, right. Yeah.
At Figure Eight Studios. Yeah. Oh. That was mostly the vocals on some of the songs.
Right.
Oh yeah, he was great to record vocals with, I have to say. And it was like he really got into it. He was passionate about it, and I feel like the reason why a lot of the vocals came out well was working with him. So
I see.
I want to make sure. Yeah. I was thinking about that before and then I forgot to mention it.
Well, this is why Kathy's on the call. Keep us all in check.
Just want to make sure that Eli gets credit.
Yeah.
No, that's fair.
Because he did a lot of work. A lot of work on that.
Speaking of Zen, Don Zientara, I understand, is also a pretty Zen master kind of fellow. I've never...
He's extremely Zen. Yeah. He's extremely Zen.
Yeah.
Maybe too Zen.
He's Zen.
That's a good example maybe of too Zen.
But
I don't know. I've loved it. I mean, he's so dry and ridiculous.
He has a dry sense of humor. He has a very dry sense of humor.
Which I appreciate. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I just wanted to say that I appreciate this time we've had together to talk about this band that I didn't know. I'm being honest with you. I didn't know much about. And it's wonderful. So I'm very happy that you're in my lives. My life. I'm Indian, so I have many lives, apparently. Given what we've established in terms of geographical constraints, if you will, and the casual nature of the band, Christina, are there plans to make more music together again anytime soon somehow in this weird dynamic of being separated from one another?
There's some casual plans.
How could there be anything else?
Yeah. Nothing. I don't know. Does someone else want to answer that? Like,
Kathy, what do you think? Is there something on the horizon?
Well, I think we would like to play shows. You know, after having put this record out, I think we would like to do some shows based on that. But, you know, anytime we get together and play, we write stuff. So I imagine, you know, if we get together to do shows, we would probably get together and we would probably end up writing some stuff.
Yeah, it's hard not to write something when Steve starts playing drums. I can't help it.
Yeah, I get the sense that he can be the impetus, particularly I was referencing Velvet Fields. So that just starts with Steve, as I recall, playing. And
there's a lot of songs that start with Steve.
Yeah.
On the first record, almost every single song starts with me.
Right.
But I think most of the songs started out, besides the cover song, started out with Steve's drum beats, though. That's how I look at it. It's sort of like,
yeah,
Steve starts playing and me and Kathleen are like, oh, and we just start playing and we just start building.
That's cool.
So if we get together, maybe we'll make some more music, you know, maybe one song for the next 10 years or something. I don't know. Just kidding.
Hopefully we can be more optimistic than that. When's the last time, Steve, when's the last time you were all in the same area or space together, if you will?
3 years ago or 4 years ago. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I came back in October, 2019. And I don't think we played music together, or did we? I can't even remember.
Then
the pandemic happened. I didn't leave the UK for, 3 years or whatever.
I see.
Yeah. So, but the plan is to maybe in the summer to play some shows and get together. So it will happen. Yeah. But it's
That's
loose.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everything has to be a little loose given that we are in a pandemic still.
Yeah.
So I assume that's a factor as well. I was going to say, Kathy, you've been on and off again, busy again with Bikini Kill as well. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So we started touring back in 2019, I guess. And then we were supposed to do a kind of a longer tour starting in March of 2020. So we were all out in Portland practicing for that when the pandemic started. So we had to cancel that whole tour. So in the last year, we've been trying to make up some of those shows that we had to cancel. But then we got sick. Some of us would get sick with COVID and then we'd have to cancel shows and then we'd get back together and try to start again. And then someone else would get sick. So yeah, it's been kind of stop and go a little bit.
So okay, I appreciate that. So beyond Casual Dots, this is a nice segue into any other future plans any of you might want to talk about, musically or otherwise, anything you want people to know about. I'm happy to give you this space. Steve, what's going on with you over in England? Anything?
Oh, yeah. I play in this band called Snoozers and I make kind of videos for bands and a lot of them are fictional. So I'm,
Fake. You make videos for fake bands.
Yeah. I make kind of instrumentals and then I make the band up and then, maybe I shouldn't say that, but I keep busy, but I play in a band, playing the drums in this band called Snoozers that play occasionally, but not that often. It's, that's very nice. Yeah.
Is Snoozers a real band that I don't
it's
know?
It's a real band,
trust.
Real people. We play shows, We
they played with Bikini Kill
in Germany. Yeah. And it was fun.
Cool.
Yeah. And we just played recently. And it's a very fun band to be in because it doesn't require all that much. We practice in a bedroom and I only play two drums. It's kind of quiet, and I like that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And recordings at this point or just playing out?
Yeah, there's a single and we've made lots of recordings, but there's nothing. And there's a label that's putting them out in Austria called Fetkako. I say it wrong.
I was listening to it on Bandcamp the other night.
Oh, right. Oh. The Snoozers. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounded good.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's fun. Yeah. And so I say I'm busy with that, but that's the only kind of, thing that I'm doing recently.
But you're a visual artist too.
Yeah, I make my money or some money from that. Not much, but So I'm busy I keep myself busy with little projects.
What's the nature of your visual art exactly? Is it how would you describe it?
I suppose it's sort of like illustration. Yeah, but I just kind of, I draw a lot and they're kind of, cartoons. Some people use them for something and I've sold pieces, It's very varied. I'm kind of, I keep myself.
Yeah, no, I brought that up because Bikini Kill has used Steve's art in posters and a t-shirt, like our best-selling t-shirt is this dog.
Yeah, dog giving a middle finger. It's my
dog. A dog giving a middle finger.
And the Casual Dots t-shirts, too.
It's, the Casual Dots t-shirts. My in-law's dog suddenly developed an opposable thumb. I am.
I appreciate
a rampage against the humans. Yeah. You know,
I appreciate your humility and modesty, Steve, and I also appreciate Kathy being like, "Come on, man, you do a lot of cool stuff. Let's talk about it real quick."
Yeah, his art's amazing.
Okay, cool.
Thanks, but you know, it's something that I do every once in a while, but I'm trying to build up some more things. That's why I say I made a video recently, and it's very fun just to make goofy videos on your phone.
Well, I can link to some things in the as I distribute this episode. Steve, if people want to learn more about the Snoozers or your work, is there anywhere they can go on their telephones, on their computers?
Yeah, Snoozers is on Bandcamp, and you know, I've Instagram, I suppose, but you know, I'll send you some links to it.
Please do. We'll do the capitalist bullshit stuff. No, but it's good. It's good. You should get some. It's intriguing to hear about all these things you do. That's great. Thank you for that. Christina, similar questions. Anything on the horizon beyond the Casual Dots and, can we do some self-promotion for you? Any links that you can share?
I'm working on a project called While, W-H-I-L-E, with my friend Irene O'Leary. We're still working on it, but it should be out in the spring, probably on Ixorstix.
Oh, cool. So more music on the horizon. That's great.
Yeah. We're making an EP.
Sweet. And where are you doing that?
Right here.
Oh, nice. Yes, you've got a little space there. That's great. Yeah. All right, cool. And did you say where we can learn more about it? I can't remember. You mentioned the label.
It'll be on Bandcamp, Ixorstix. I think we might be pressing some physical copies, some vinyl.
Oh, cool.
But probably
awesome. That's Christina's label.
Yeah, Ixorstix is my label. But actually, the Casual Dots
Kathy's
records
here.
Are
Kathy's here helping us hype everyone.
I'm just filling in the blank.
That's your own label. Okay, great. Yeah. Any other... artists on the label that we might know or should be more aware of?
It was kind of a label a long time ago that Quixotic was on, and Cromtech, which is Mick Barr's old band, was on the label. And then putting out the Casual Dots, we just resurrected the label.
Yes, I see that now. I was like, this sounds familiar, Ixorstix. And I'm looking at for those listening, I'm looking at the back of the latest Casual Dots record. And yeah, I see it there. So that's your label. I see.
Okay. Yeah. So
is there some connection to Discord is helping distribute it or something? Is that right? Or
yeah, they're distributing the vinyl, the physical copies. Yeah.
So people can also, does your label have a website? I don't even know if people use these anymore.
For right now, we're just on Bandcamp.
Bandcamp. Okay.
So yeah.
But people could potentially learn more about it at discord.com if they're digging onto the site. Is that right?
Yeah, I think they do a little bit of promotion for what they sell, what they distribute, but not as much as if you're on the label. But yeah.
So the most direct way is your Bandcamp to grab this record, I'm gathering.
For right now, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. Sorry, convoluted as always. I'm sorry about that. Kathy, you will make everything clear. That's your job today. You've been done a great job. What's coming up next for you and Bikini Kill or anything else?
So Bikini Kill is going to tour in Australia and New Zealand starting in February, the end of February into March, and then I'll be home for about a week, and then we start on dates in the United States. We're trying to do all the shows that we had to cancel when we got sick last summer.
I was approached to interview Kathleen around the 2019 tour, and then it all fell apart, and I have not been able to connect with her since. Are there Canadian dates on this run of
dates? Yes, okay. There's two in Montreal and either one or two in Toronto. But that's it.
Not Edmonton, Alberta for some strange reason.
Nope. Sorry.
All right.
We actually played the very first time in Canada. In September, we played in Victoria. We'd never played there before.
Oh,
anywhere
weird.
In Canada. Yeah.
It seems like it would have been more fitting for you to play Vancouver, just to add to the nominal confusion.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we decided to play Victoria. It was a festival.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Well, listen, I appreciate all of this. I appreciate you. Thank you for spending seemingly extra time with me than we had planned to, but I really appreciate this. I want to go out on a song from the new record, and I want to ask you to pick it. However, we have three people here, so here's what's going to happen. I'm going to ask one of you to pick the song. The other two have veto power. If they don't like the choice, we have a debate, and then there's a parliamentary review. It goes through a whole process. So I'm going to go to... I feel like, Steve, I want your perspective on this. I'm going to go to you. You look confused. So I don't know if you're...
I wasn't expecting that. You know, you should pick somebody else.
No, fair enough.
Wait, what are you doing?
We're gonna get one of you to pick a song from Saguin Truth for us to play for the people right now, is what I'm saying. And I'm going to ask one of you to pick it. And so Steve has declined, which is unusual. Right away, off the bat, I veto even being asked to choose. Christina, can you pick a song for us to go out on from the new record and tell us why you chose it?
Can Kathy do it? Okay. So
double veto. Never happened before.
I would say I'm just going to give you a couple choices, Christina, and you can choose.
Okay, that's
either
good.
Descending.
Yeah.
Or High Speed Chase, I think. I mean, my favorite song on the record is Palindrome, but I don't know if that's the one we want to go out on necessarily.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bummer, but
yeah. I mean, okay. I love it. I
like Descending.
Lot, yeah, Descending
is what I was going to say.
Me too, actually. But
yeah.
So we went from two vetoes to complete consensus? This is really unprecedented. Yeah. I've never
that's
seen
the way it works.
All right. This is a lovely song called Descending by the Casual Dots. Christina, Kathy, Steve, thank you so much for this time with me. I hope you enjoyed yourselves somehow, despite my bumbling and mumbling, and I hope we'll speak again.
No, it's nice that somebody else is
so
bumbling
much.
And mumbling.
We'll speak again soon. Best of luck with everything in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. Much. Yeah.
Bye.
This is great. Thank you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I don't know if this sounds delusional, but that one, I kind of feel like I made some new friends. I don't often feel that way. I didn't know who these people were, really. Never talked to them. And then we got along, I think, pretty well. All lots of friendly emails back and forth, I think. It's nice. Anyway, again, you be the judge. Maybe I didn't make new friends. It feels like I did. Thanks again to Christina, Kathy, and Steve of the Casual Dots, a.k.a. my new friends, for appearing on this, the 745th episode of Creative Control. I think I have the math right on that, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, which I'm behind on, I realize, as I'm saying this out loud, please visit vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on various social media platforms. The ones that I know for sure we have are Facebook, Twitter, still somehow, Vish Creative on Twitter. You can also follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at vishkana. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation. $6 American or more grants you access to exclusive content, and you get the episodes earlier than everyone else. And if you donate on that at that tier and are interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, just message me on Patreon, and I will get you one while supplies last. Again, that's the primary source of revenue for all the work that I put into this show, and was just texting with a fellow musician friend today about how we both wish the music we make or the things like this that I make, that's all we like doing, and, you know, you can't make a living somehow. Anyway, boo-hoo, right? I'm just telling you, that's a general feeling among the creative people you like and support. Man, if only I could just do this. Anyway, sorry, this is a weird tangent. Patreon.com/creativecontrol if you want to support the show. Thanks again to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, with locations in Edmonton and Calgary. You can learn more about Blackbird and order records from them directly at blackbird.ca. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their long time and in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on this program. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And last but not least, of course, thank you for listening to this episode with the Casual Dots. I hope you also feel like you made some new friends with this band. They're lovely people. Love their music. Check out their records if you haven't heard them. Do that stuff. And also, please subscribe to this podcast, follow it, tell your friends about it, spread the word about Creative Control. All of that means a lot and does help a lot. So thank you. I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.